Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham on AM 770 KTTH. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital Management, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often treacherous financial markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
All right, welcome back to the show, and thank you for joining us for the most scintillating hour of finance. I'm Zach Abraham, your host, and you're going to have to forgive me right out of the gates. A little bit raspy today. My four-year-old, God bless him, Cyrus, just started preschool this year. He kid's like a Petri dish on legs. Comes home with his nasty little colds, and he spreads them to me. But he's worth it. He's worth it. Love him to death. Anyway, we are recording this show. This is the day after. Unfortunately, I've got to go down to Palm Springs tomorrow morning for a conference down there for 2 days. And it's not fun. Don't say unfortunately. Beautiful golf courses. Great golf course at the resort we're staying at. But I don't even get to play. I'm going to be stuck inside all day. It's like torture. It's like, hey, we're going to go to this amazing buffet. We're going to take you to J. Howie's Steakhouse in Bellevue. But you're not going to eat. You're just going to sit there and watch. But anyway, hey, after the elections last night, by the way, thank you to Michael Medved and Jason Rantz. We had a phenomenal party in Kirkland. Wish you all could have been there with us. That's why you got to become clients. You can come next year, right? But anyway, wanted to get this show in today because we're going to miss and didn't want to do a rerun. Too much stuff to talk about. Got a great show planned for you today. Not going to be laid out like typical. Don't have a lot of time to get in the market update because we're doing almost the entire show is going to be dedicated to another interview with an old guest of ours, Brent Johnson, the chief investment officer of the Santiago Gold Fund. You can find him all over the place. He's frequently published on Zero Hedge. He's done several videos for Real Vision. Brilliant guy. And I think he's extra brilliant because he agrees with me. But no, just a great guy, articulate, really knows his stuff. Had him on the show before, and he came on today to give us an update, so we got that for you. Other than that, market update. Markets rallied big today. Don't really pay attention to it. I think it's noise. Don't think there's going to be a crash or anything. Not exactly the outcome we were looking for, but folks, this ain't no blue wave either. And I don't think it's enough to overturn the stuff that Trump's got, at least in the short term. And you know, as always, you know, like I said, this was not some big referendum. There's no blue wave. So all in all, could have gone better, but not disastrous. So hang in there. I think these value stocks are going to keep getting a bid. Be careful with those tech stocks. And as always, guys, if you're not having these conversations, if you're not going out on election night and hanging out with Michael Medved and Jason Rantz and Todd Herman, give us a call. 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. You can ask us how we do it. How do we expose you to less risk? How do we decrease your fees? And how do we improve your upside? Well, you can get the you can get the free booklet. You can go to the website at knowyourriskradio.com. You can get sign up for the free newsletter. You can get a phone consultation, 15 minutes. You talk to me. There's no tricks, no sales gimmicks. We just tell you how we do things, compare it to how you do things, and show how we can improve your situation. So give us a call. You can also email us. You don't have to call us directly if you don't feel like it. Maybe you don't want to talk on the phone. That's fine. But you got to see how we're doing things because our portfolios are suited for a rising interest rate environment, greater protection, lower cost. Anyway, we got to get rolling. But stick with us because we got a great interview, almost the entire hour dedicated to Brent Johnson of Santiago Gold Fund. And it's just great stuff. Econ geeks should love it. Finance geeks should love it. So stick with us. We'll be right back. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach uncover the truth about the financial markets with simple and honest advice to help you plan for retirement. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
I have to tell you, what a relief for my wife and me when we got signed up for long-term care coverage. The more I learned about the fact that nearly 3 out of 4 of us will need some form of long-term care in our retirement, there are so many issues at play. For some people, they can't afford it and they become a burden on their friends and family. For others, you do have money set aside, but it wipes out everything that you've saved. And maybe most importantly, it's about having a plan so that all your children have to do is carry out your wishes. It's not a burden on them. And that's why I love the advice we got from Brian Ott and 525 Advisors. We started by going to one of Brian's free classes, and that's what I recommend you do to find out about all the different plans they offer. And Brian has his last 3 classes of the year coming up, November 17th, December 8th, and December 14th. So make sure to reserve your spot today. Seating will be limited. Go to 525longtermcare.com. You'll get a free copy of Brian's book, too. 525longtermcare.com.
Stocks, bonds, and real estate are all at record highs. So why risk it? Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer of Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Call now and get our brand new version of Common Sense Investing. It's our complimentary booklet that shows you how you can protect your retirement portfolio against loss, but still participate in market gains. Safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. Our clients have increased their returns while being insured against loss. And like our client Dory Monson says, go from retirement hoping to retirement planning.
I am indeed a client, Zach, and I got to tell you, you have to read Zach's brand new version of Common Sense Investing. You'll learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call now, get your free copy, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management's a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for joining us. And we want to get into the heart of the show, the main attraction, if you will. We are being joined today by Brent Johnson, the CIO of the Santiago Gold Fund. And we've had him on before, had to get him on again to get an update on the dollar milkshake theory that we've talked a lot about that I have shamelessly stolen from him. Anyway, Brent, thank you for joining us again. Really appreciate you taking the time, and great to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm always happy to come in and talk about this topic. You know, I think about it all the time, so it's not too much extra work for me to talk about it.
I know. I'm in the same boat. My clients ask me all the time. They go, Zach, you know, don't you get tired of talking about this? And I go, are you kidding me? I sit around and look at myself every single day and go, I get paid to talk about this stuff and do what we love. I know you feel the same way.
Yeah, no, it's listen, it's a fascinating time in history, and it's going to be interesting 5-10 years from now to be able to look back at this and say we went through it.
No kidding, man. Talk about well, you know, it's career validation, right? I mean, you tell people, look, I might be, you know, I think you and I are both on the younger side of the money management game. At the same time, if you've managed money through the last 12 years, yeah, you've lived through pretty much everything.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think the next 12 years will only be even more interesting than the last 12, as crazy as that is to believe.
No kidding. Okay, so first get started. Now, full disclosure, Brent, I don't know that you and I have talked about this, but our radio station that we're on is KTTH. It's the number one political talk radio show in Seattle, and we're home to Rush Limbaugh. So you know that we've got a biased audience, and I don't say biased badly. You know, it's not a bad way. Yeah. But you know who you're talking to, so whether that's good.
I can remember being a little kid when I grew up in Nebraska, driving around with my dad, and he always had Rush Limbaugh on. So I'm familiar.
Yeah, right. That was part of my education growing up. I'm the same way. I went to the Limbaugh Institute of Excellence, I believe Rush refers to.
There you go.
So anyway, let's start off right at the top, and we want to get in the dollar milkshake theory, but What is your take on last night? What'd you see? What do you think? There obviously wasn't that blue wave. I think you and I were both, from what I saw on Twitter, I thought we were going to continue to roll. I thought that they'd hold both both chambers of Congress. Tell us how you read last night and what your take was.
Yeah, well, first thing I'll tell you is I knew yesterday was going to be ridiculous and crazy and people were going to be foaming at the mouth on both sides. And so, to be honest, I went and played golf yesterday and I didn't even look at the news until 8 o'clock last night.
That's wisdom.
So, you know, I just I kind of find myself in the non-political camp. I have negative comments for both sides usually. So
I
just decided to sit yesterday out. But I will say that I was in the minority. I think in general the consensus was that the House would go to the Democrats, that the Democrats would pick up seats in the Senate, and that we'd have a divided Congress. And that's kind of what happened. Although, you know, and I thought that Republicans would hold both houses. So I've said that on a couple occasions. So I got that wrong. I just did not think that there would be this blue wave based on, you know, people I talked to and traveling around the country, et cetera, et cetera. And so I guess I did get that part right, because there certainly was not a blue wave.
No.
The Democrats did take the House, not by nearly as much as was expected. But the Republicans actually picked up seats in the Senate. And, you know, if you go back historically, almost every president loses the House in the midterm election. And it's pretty rare to pick up, you know, that much of a number in the Senate. So I think there's enough here for both sides to claim victory. I'm sure they both will and have. But I've seen nothing in the last 24 hours that makes me change my opinion on the markets.
Yeah. Okay. So let's get into that then. So for those of you that didn't hear the first interview that we did with Brent, I can't urge you enough to go back and listen to it on our iTunes page or iTunes store, whatever that is. But one of the things we talked about was the Brent's dollar milkshake theory. And the reason that we had him on to discuss it was because if we listen to Brent talk, you're going to quickly realize that he talks about these things in a much more articulate manner than I do. But in general, it was fascinating for me. And Brent, you and I talked about this the first time we talked on the phone. I felt like I was insane because I saw a future where we'd have, you know, geopolitical issues and economic issues and things of that nature. But based on especially the geopolitical situations in China and so on and so forth and emerging markets, I looked at it and I said, you know, I think we're going to see this flight to safety to the U.S. You could see the dollar up, stocks up, gold up. You took it a whole different, you know, several different levels further and moved it on down the road. But we had this similar outlook and I've stolen it from you. It's that dollar milkshake theory. Give us an update on where we're at on that and what you see and if that's changed at all.
Sure. So just as a little 30-second primer for anybody who didn't hear the previous episode, the dollar milkshake theory is the theory that the dollar is an absolutely horrible currency except for compared to all the other horrible currencies in the world. and, you know, since 2008, all the central banks of the world injected enormous amounts of liquidity currency into the system. And they made this, you know, currency milkshake. But a couple years ago, the U.S. swapped out their syringe and stopped injecting new capital into the system. And instead, they stuck a straw down in there. And by raising interest rates, they are sucking up all that currency milkshake that the rest of the world has, you know, mixed up. And we're sucking it up into our domestic market. That's going to make the dollar get stronger. I think the dollar is the best performing index year to date.
Yeah.
I think it's up more than anything else. Well, after today, maybe not. But in any case, the dollar's up 5 or 6% year to date, and most markets are down. And as that capital flows into the dollar, it's going to find its way into U.S. dollar assets. It will allow the U.S. government to continue funding their government, yet even though it will be at higher deficit levels. I think it will find its way into other dollar-based assets, specifically equities. And I think we will have this blow-off top in the equity market as all other countries around the world implode one by one because of the amount of debts that they have. And it will eventually come back and hit the United States, and we will suffer it as well. But I think we will be the last ones to get hit. And so, you know, that's kind of my theory, is that this is all going to end very badly. It's just not going to end yet.
If you're just joining us, this is Zach Abraham, and we're talking to Brent Johnson, the Chief Investment Officer of the Santiago Gold Fund. Okay, and I couldn't agree with you more. And one of the, I got to pay a little more homage to you. One of the things that really got me thinking about this was, I think it was the first Real Vision video you did, Step into Liquidity. And
yes.
For those of you that don't have a Real Vision, go look up realvision.com. If you like this finance nerd, economic nerd, great source of information. And Brent's got two or three videos on there now. But anyway, I think it's the part of the market, especially in the retail world, that people don't understand. We've got value, we've got growth, we've got all these things, but liquidity really drives it all. And you know, for instance, you can have this company XYZ over here that's, you know, killing it on earnings and all that other kind of stuff. And then you can have another company over here. Maybe it's not as good, not as good a product, whatever. But if more money is flowing into company A than's flowing into B, the price of company A, regardless of its underlying performance or its fundamentals, it's going to go up more. It's just liquidity, right?
Right.
And you do a great job of explaining that and really kind of helped me flesh out some of my theories on it. But one of the, as it relates to the dollar and talking to the audience that we're talking to on this radio station, there's a lot of dollar bears out there. And one of my favorite sources of entertainment recently was watching this Twitter exchange you got into, people, where I believe that the question you phrased was, don't tell me something negative about the dollar. Tell me another currency. And I read that chain and I laughed because I sat there and I went, and all these dollar bears just start answering, right? And I sit there based on listening to you talk and the conversations that you and I have had. I sat there and I went, look, you guys are missing the forest for the trees. He's got better and more bearish dollar arguments than you do. That's not the point. The point is, what are we measuring it against, right? And everybody misses that. We've got a horrific debt structure here in the United States. It's only a matter of time, and I know you and I agree on this, only a matter of time until the U.S. dollar loses hegemony. But we're just not there yet, and whether you like it or not, it's the cleanest dirty shirt. So explain that a little bit. I said, you do it in more articulate ways than I do, but explain that relationship to people that you're not going to see the dollar lose its power until there's a replacement.
Right. And so the reason, so basically, you know, the question was, give me a dollar bearish argument using a positive attribute from another currency.
That's right, yeah.
And I had all these people come back and tell me that the U.S. debt was too big and that we were running these trade deficits and that we couldn't do this and couldn't do that. And, you know, the point was, is I already understand all that. But tell me which other country is doing a better job or that has a number of positive aspects to their fiat currencies. And the reality is there's just not an answer. And I, you know, there was kind of a facetious question because, you know, I already knew the answer. And I really, really, really want to get this across. I understand the bearish dollar arguments very well. I started off as a dollar bear because I didn't think that the Federal Reserve, once they started printing, would ever stop.
Yep.
But the fact of the matter is that they did. And when they did, I didn't think initially that they'd be able to stop for very long. I thought they'd have to revert. But you know what? They didn't. Now, many people don't like that because it's thrown their whole world upside down. They didn't think they'd be able to stop, and they didn't think if they did stop, they'd be able to stop for very long without the markets crashing. But you know what? It's been 3 years since we started raising rates. We've raised rates 5 or 6 times, and the markets are at their all-time highs. So, you know, at some point, you got to step back and say, what am I missing? What did I get wrong? Why is this happening when I didn't think it could happen? And, you know, I got put to that position 3 or 4 years ago. And, you know, I had to question all of my thesis, and I went back and I kind of came out with this way. There's only one way that this can happen. And let me say something else. I might end up being wrong on this, right?
Yeah.
I'm not sitting here saying absolutely 100% I'm right. I'm pretty sure I'm right, but it's possible I'm wrong. But I don't think I am because of how much work I've put into it, right?
Yeah.
And that's why the reason I'm as confident as I am is the amount of work I've done on it. And the reality is that there is a way for the dollar to get stronger despite all of the negative aspects to it. And without going into too much detail of what that is, and I'm happy to go into detail if you want to, but the issue is that everybody knows that or a lot of people know that when the dollar takes on gold, gold will beat the dollar. And that's absolutely true. Gold is a better currency than the dollar.
Yep.
The problem is we're just not to that point of the movie yet. Before we get to the final showdown, the dollar is going to have many, many battles along the way with the yen and the euro and the yuan and the Aussie dollar and the British, or the, you know, the British pound and the Brazilian real. And the dollar is going to crush all of those other fiat currencies, because in the same way that the dollar has all these negative aspects, all those other fiat currencies also have negative aspects. And those other fiat currencies don't have all the advantages that a world reserve currency has. So it's a progression. And, you know, I'm the first to admit that I thought the progression to the final showdown between gold and the dollar would happen sooner than it has. And I'm still convinced it ultimately will happen. But we're just not there yet. To the point you made a little bit ago, we're just not there yet. And I think that that's how the progression goes. I think all the other fiat currencies die first, and ultimately the dollar dies last. Gold does extremely well, and then they will bring in some new system that replaces, you know, this old fiat system. And, you know, I've always said that I do not think that the governments of the world will put gold back into the monetary system until they absolutely have no other option left.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And I just don't think we're to that point yet. And so I'm convinced it will happen. I don't think that we will go back to a gold standard, by the way.
Yeah.
I do think it's very possible that governments will be forced to use gold in some form or another to bring confidence back to the system. But I don't think that we're going to go back to a full-fledged gold standard. It's possible. I think it's unlikely, because one of the hardest things I think for people to do is to not just put themselves in somebody else's shoes and look at it from their point of view. But when you sit in their chair, when you sit in their shoes and you look at the world, you also have to think like they think. It's one thing to look at it from their point of view but still think like you think. It's another thing to stand in their shoes and think like they think.
No kidding.
And most people in the world don't see gold the way that you and I do. Most governments in the world do not, under any circumstances, want to go back to a gold standard. Now, it might be forced upon them eventually, but it's not the natural flow that they would like to see happen. Now, it doesn't mean it won't happen. Doesn't mean they won't be forced to do it. But it's not the natural answer for them that it might be for you and me.
Well, and I think the easiest way to explain that to the layman is when you're on a gold standard, it's a lot harder to run $1 trillion deficits, right? I mean,
yeah.
it just is,
right.
Which is why we got off the gold standard in the first place. I mean, that's a whole nother discussion. But no, I agree with you. Which, by the way, full disclosure, that could be the kiss of death for you, right? If you get my seal of approval on the idea, then you know that might be all she wrote.
No worries.
Now, something interesting you brought up, and I love listening to you talk about it. Not so much that it, this was the first conversation you and I had. I'm thinking back to talking to you on the phone in my office, but one of the things that's fascinating to listen to you talk about this is you and I have very similar paths that we came to this realization with. And I want to kind of lead into this next part of the conversation, you know, talking about that relationship to the dollar and gold, and by gold, the dollar's going down and all that kind of stuff. I get that. There's another big part to play in this, and feel free to critique this, what I'm going to say. But one of the things that I started wrapping my head around is this realization that I think anybody that's read anything finance related in the last decade realizes, that we're swimming in this unbelievable and unprecedented pool of debt unlike the world has ever seen. And when we, then I look over to China, and, they're by far the worst offenders. I think total debt outstanding is somewhere around 340% of GDP. And At a massive amount of that debt is not denominated in gold. Those loans, that debt, a massive percentage of it, and I don't know, maybe you can fill in the blank, a massive percentage of it is denominated in U.S. dollars. You and I haven't talked about China, so maybe this will be a disagreement. I look at China and I see an absolute house of cards that is a matter of when, not if. It has to go. When it goes, that alone could drive the dollar parabolic. And I'm not talking DXY in the 200s or something crazy like that. Yep. But in currency terms, the drive for dollars at that point will be absolutely breathtaking. And that kind of gets me into, I wanted you to address that, but I also wanted to have a conversation with you about tariffs. I want to hear your thought on that. But first, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with Brent Johnson. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach discuss key investment strategies across several asset classes, not just stocks and bonds. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Hey, it's Story Monson with my financial advisor, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. And Zach, what I love about you guys is your focus on risk management.
Well, Dory, we're a fiduciary and a holistic retirement planning firm. Our goals are simple. Get our clients the highest returns with the least amount of risk and cost.
I know they're normally used for safety, but how risky are bonds right now?
If a significant portion of your retirement portfolio is in cash or bonds, that just doesn't work in this low interest rate environment on the verge of inflation. You need a bond replacement strategy.
I gotta tell you, you have to read it. Zach's brand new version of Common Sense Investing. You'll learn that bond replacement strategy, learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call now, get your free copy, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management's a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back to the show. This is Zach Abraham and Know Your Risk Radio, and we are going to continue our discussion with Brent Johnson, the Chief Investment Officer of Santiago Gold Fund. Regardless of whether it's coming from the left or the right, the tariff conversation as it relates to China is something that I literally beat my head against a wall about on a weekly basis because I feel like everybody is completely missing the point. And so before I get in there, nobody's tuning in to hear what I have to say about this. Kind of tell me your thoughts on that whole sucking for dollar sound that we're going to hear when this whole China thing starts falling apart. And then what your take is on this whole China tariff situation.
Okay. So I'm going to come at this from three different angles. Okay. So the basic premise behind everything in economics is supply and demand. Okay.
Yep.
If there's low supply and high demand, price rises. Okay.
Yep.
And so, you know, everybody always makes things, especially when you get into things like derivatives and currency bets and stuff like that. It sounds very complicated because they use very complicated language. And I'm convinced that they do that on purpose so that most lay people can't understand it.
I totally agree.
But it really comes down to three things that for the supply and the demand of the dollar. Now, there's this theory out there that there's waning demand for the dollar because the world is sick of the dollar and they're tired of the U.S. using it as a weapon. They don't want to be beholden to the U.S. Status quo anymore, and so they will start this. These bilateral trade agreements and, you know, maybe these special purpose vehicles to move away from the dollar. And here's the thing. That's fine. And I agree that that's happening. I agree that it will continue to happen. And I agree that it will happen with increasing frequency. There's two problems with that being dollar negative, though. Just because that will happen, in my opinion, it's actually dollar positive in the short term. In the long run, it's dollar negative. But in the short term, it's dollar positive. And the reason is supply and demand. If supply shrinks and demand even stays steady, price rises. We've already got a situation where the demand for dollars outstrips the supply. De-dollarization efforts actually restrict the supply even more.
Right.
Because if you de-dollarize, that means that less dollars are floating around out there. It means that the supply of dollars is constrained.
Right.
And so even if demand drops, if supply drops even faster, price rises. So that's one way that de-dollarization can be short-term dollar positive. Now, there's another way that de-dollarization can happen. And that is, what if all these countries decide, you know, we're not paying our dollar debts. We are going to default on our dollar debts. And I should say, the dollar debts out there are one of the key drivers of dollar demand. If you take out a loan in dollars, there you have a demand for dollars every year just to pay the interest, and then you have demand of dollars to pay off the principal.
That's right.
And so just the fact that there's dollar loans out there, there's huge demand for the dollar. Now, let's say one of the arguments is these countries will just default on these loans and walk away. Well, based on a debt-based monetary system, if money is loaned into existence and those loans then get loaned into, you know, they start a pyramiding effect for more and more loans to be brought into existence, and that's how you get the multiplicity factor of money. If those debts get defaulted on, supply not only drops, it evaporates.
Right.
Now, that's exactly, you know, for people who don't quite understand, this is what happened in 2008. The reason that we had such a crisis in 2008 was because one debt started defaulting, it cascaded into another debt that defaulted, and it cascaded into another debt that defaulted. And pretty soon, you get into a deflationary spiral because money is evaporating. There's no money to go around. And so people start holding on to the money that they do have. They don't spend it. They don't lend it out because they're afraid they'll never get it back. And so the demand for money increases, and that means the price of the dollar goes higher. It's a classic bank run, right?
Right.
When there's a run on the bank, there's not enough money to go around for everybody. And when people start pulling their money out of the bank, it makes the supply of dollars even lower. And so it's even higher demand for the dollars that still exist. That's why there's lines outside of a bank that's going through a bank run. It's the same thing here. So that's two different ways that de-dollarization can actually be dollar positive in the short term.
Yep.
Now, that's...
Well, and Brent, I don't mean to cut you off, but if people want a reference point, we can just look at 2008, 2009, right? The dollar in U.S.
Right.
Treasuries
exactly.
Went through the roof.
Exactly. So now I mentioned there's a three-pronged thing that we were talking about earlier. So the de-dollarization, that's just one of the prongs, right? The next one is tariffs. You mentioned tariffs. It's the same. Again, it gets back to supply and demand. The way that the monetary system is designed is the global reserve currency nation has to run a trade deficit in order to supply the rest of the world with the necessary dollars to operate based on the design. If you start throwing up tariffs and you no longer trade as much, it again restricts the flow of the dollar, depriving the rest of the world of these dollars that they need to operate. The second thing is that Trump has thrown these tariffs up is because we have a trade deficit. He wants to get the trade deficit down. Well, the problem is, based on the design of the system, the global reserve currency nation is not supposed to get the trade deficit down. But Trump doesn't give a damn about the design of the monetary system, right?
Yeah.
He wants to make America great again.
Yeah.
He wants to get it back to a level playing field where our tariffs are the same as Chinese tariffs and European tariffs. He wants fair trade, right?
Yep.
That's fine. It makes a lot of sense. I tend to agree with it. The problem is that goes counterintuitive to the design of the monetary system. But Trump doesn't care. So these tariffs and these policies that he has is not only reducing the flow of dollars, but it potentially reduces the supply of dollars dramatically. So again, we get back into supply and demand. All of these dollar loans are out there. All of these dollar loans have to be paid off. If they don't get paid off, they default, supply disappears. So it's kind of a vicious cycle. Okay?
Yep.
So far we've got de-dollarization as one prong. We've got tariffs as another. Now the third prong, I said this is a three-legged argument. The third leg is rates. The Fed is not only not printing money. I think a lot of people in the gold world come to the gold world under the, you know, understanding or the, you know, the realization that, you know, the U.S. has all these bad debts that can never be paid off, so they're going to have to inflate away the currency and print the money in order to stay solvent, right?
Right.
So they think that the dollar is just going to be printed into oblivion. And potentially down the road, that is exactly what's going to happen. But right now, it is not happening. And not only is it not happening, but the Fed is doing the exact opposite. They are raising rates, which is not only not printing money, it's the opposite of printing money, right? So they're raising rates. That's sucking capital into the United States from around the world, again, depriving the rest of the world of the dollars that they need to trade and to fund their dollar debts. And it's also making it more attractive for investors around the world, you know, that want to just park their money in the global reserve currency because they need it to trade. You know, I would, you know, if somebody's sitting in Europe that has to pay the Swiss National Bank or, you know, the German Bund negative rates to hold their money or just go invest it in the U.S. and get 3%, that's pretty attractive, right?
Yeah.
And so again, we get back to this supply and demand thing. This is the straw that I was talking about that's drinking up the global liquidity. And so, you know, we've just got these three different factors where, you know, the demand for dollars is still there, but the supply of dollars is not there as much as it was. And somewhat related to rates is not only are we sucking up dollars the rest of the world has, you know, into our treasuries, but the treasury is issuing new bonds to run their deficits. But here's the thing, they're not, you know, during QE, the treasury would issue the bond and the Fed would buy it, right?
Yep.
Well, that's not happening anymore. So the Fed is not providing the money to the government, new money. So when the treasury issues bonds, they are going out and they are buying dollars from the market. And they're buying dollars that are not being increased in number. So there's a limited supply of dollars, and now they're coming in and they're competing with the rest of the world to get that limited supply of dollars.
Yep.
So you know, if you've just got this perfect, I call it the perfect dollar storm.
Yeah.
Because it wouldn't happen without a Fed president who said, the emerging markets are not my problem. It's not my job to bail out the emerging markets, which Powell has said.
Which I agree with him.
Right. It wouldn't work with a president who wasn't enacting trade tariffs and, you know, trying to get free trade or fair trade. And it wouldn't happen. It just we've kind of got this crazy scenario where the rest of the world is still printing. We're not. We've got the world reserve currency. We're depriving the rest of the world of the currency that they need to operate. And so, you know, it's just kind of this perfect storm of dollar supply and demand, which I think is going to lead to a dramatic short squeeze on the dollar. And anybody who's ever been involved in a short squeeze knows that the prices that happen in a short squeeze don't make any sense. Price or value have nothing to do with it. It's just a complete function of supply and demand. It's capitalism at its rawest form.
And so that's
why I think the dollar is going so much higher.
You made my stomach turn talking about a short squeeze. I've been there. It's not it's not fun. Not fun at
now,
all.
I want to say again, because I feel like I need to repeat myself 100 times. The dollar is a horrible currency.
Yes.
It has so many flaws, I cannot even begin to list them. But all the other currencies have the flaws as well. The dollar will eventually go away, but until there is an alternative, this is where funds flow to.
Yeah, and I don't mean to cut you off, but I want you to keep going. But that to me is why I wanted to have this conversation, because you came to this the same way that I did, which is I'm a bigger dollar bear and know those dollar bear arguments better than 95% of the guys out there. And that dollar bear thesis is what got me here, because if you walk it through, you place the emotion aside and you just go where it leads you, you sit there and go, and that's why I've said on my Twitter feed over and over, look, I think the dollar's going away, but contrary to what everybody believes, it's going to go away due to strength, not weakness.
Yeah. Exactly.
That so incredible.
I've also tried to figure out how we can be wrong here, right? Because, like I said, it's possible that I'm wrong. It's possible that we have this wrong. But the only way I can figure out that we're wrong is if preemptive action is taken against the dollar. And whether, you know, Trump comes out and devalues the dollar overnight by 30%. And I just don't think he needs to do that now. You know what I mean? Like, typically that type of thing happens when your back is against the wall and you need to. I mean, look how long China has not has resisted doing that, despite the pressure on the yuan, right?
Yeah.
This is not something that you need some political capital to pull this off. And I just don't think that not only does he need to do it now, I don't think he is interested in doing it yet. Now, but is it possible for him to do that? Absolutely. And that's why I still own gold. I'm not telling anybody to sell their gold. I just don't think it's going to pay off right away.
Yep.
But it's certainly possible. You should be prepared for anything. But I just think that it's unlikely that that's the way it goes. I'll tell you what. One of my biggest fears, and what I think the rest of the world should fear the most, is not that Trump is going to devalue the dollar or that he wants a weaker dollar. The biggest fear should be that he realizes or comes to the conclusion that a strong dollar helps him more than it hurts him. Because the minute he figures out that a strong dollar is the biggest club in the world, he is going to bash everybody over the head with it.
Yeah.
Because he does not care what happens as long as he looks good, right? And if he can beat up on China and he can beat up on Europe and he can beat up on South America and he can beat up on whoever it is that he feels like fighting that day with a strong dollar, he is going to be one dangerous dude.
No, and I agree. Now, and again, I'm going to throw this out there, and you can feel free to disagree with it too, but leading to the dollar milkshake theory and why I think specifically industrial type, well, they're all value stocks now, because if you're not into technology or Bitcoin, you know what I mean? It's you know, your stock has been stagnant. Except, hey, on the value side, had a great run recently with my Berkshire Hathaway that we've been holding for a while. So,
sure.
But looking at that whole side of it, looking at that dollar strength, and you know, the other thing that I think feeds right into, or excuse me, I digress. One of the other parts that you and I have discussed about the dollar milkshake theory is that we don't think it's going to be confined strictly to the currency side of it, that a lot of that liquidity is going to spill over into equity markets for variety of different reasons, record low rates, needing to get returns on money. The fact that the traditional value stocks are really cheap and, you know, in comparison to the rest of the market. And one of the things that I think, again, is going to lead into that is that as this tariff situation goes, we're already seeing the impact that's having, which I didn't honestly think was possible. It's been startling to me. But looking at the match that's lit under U.S.-based manufacturing, and I think that's going to be another driver of that milkshake theory, because when the dominoes start falling, we've had this sucking sound, to quote, was that, who was that? That was the guy that... who talked about the sucking sound of jobs for NAFTA?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I can't think of
Ross
the guy.
Perot. Wasn't it Ross Perot?
It could have been. Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
He was saying that back in the late 80s, early 90s, right?
Right. Yeah. So when you, even if we have this global slowdown, which will no doubt impact us, I think a lot of that weight domestically could be offset by this emergence or reemergence of manufacturing here domestically, which again, I just think that's going to suck even more liquidity into the U.S. It's going to give that spur underneath, especially those dividend paying value industrial type stocks. Do you think that really fits into the theory well? And do you think that plays?
It does. I'll put one qualifier on it. I think that happens. I don't think it happens necessarily because the economy's humming.
Right.
And it doesn't necessarily, I don't think it's because we're getting this breakout of growth and that fundamentally things are improving. I think it's just a function of the hydraulics of the monetary system, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't suggest that people go out and buy equities based on valuation or fundamentals or, you know, these traditional, you know, growth metrics. I just think it's the hydraulics of the system and where the liquidity is going to go. And again, should it happen? Maybe not. Is it appropriate to happen? Probably not. But is it going to happen? You know, I think it is.
Right. The basis of the theory, and if I'm hearing you correctly, and I don't mean to cut you off again, but... Yep. It's sort of kind of this lame approach, and I acknowledge it, but the underlying aspect of it is, look, it's just not going to be as bad here as it is everywhere else.
Yeah. The cleanest dirty shirt, I know everybody is sick of that term, because who wants to wear a dirty shirt? And I agree with you. I don't look at the U.S. and I say, wow, things are great here.
Right.
This is going to be a fantastic place. You know, I just think it's a we're in this fiat world, and in the fiat world is a relative world, and a lot of people in the gold world want to fight the relative world versus the absolute world. And, you know, at the end of the day, the absolute world of gold will beat the relative world of the fiat currency. But we're just not to that battle yet, I don't think.
No.
And so, you know, and in the meantime, it's a battle of relative strength. And I think the U.S. has the best relative strength. And I think the rest of the world is trying to figure out how to escape this relative system. I think they want to escape the relative system. I just think they're too little, too late to do so.
Yeah.
I think it's all going to blow up before they find this escape hatch.
Now, if you're just joining us, this is Zach Abraham, host of Know Your Risk Radio, and we are joined today with Brent Johnson, the CIO of the Santiago Gold Fund. And it doesn't guarantee that we're right, doesn't guarantee that you're right, certainly. But one of the things I look for, and I know you feel the same way, when we've got a thesis or we've got a structure, we've got a framework that we're working off of, one of the things I always look for, and I try to be really introspective and honest about, is that chain reaction of events, is it still leading in our way, right? When that, yep. You know, that domino effect, because that's always the way these trades have worked out, at least for me. I always know I'm on the right track when the dominoes, yep, keep dropping and they keep lining up, right?
Yeah.
In that vein, I actually think that the outcome of the election last night was probably about the best result you could have asked for in support of this dollar theory. And feel free to disagree with me if you want, or the milkshake theory. But I'm looking at the Democrats now taking over the House. Trump has said many times that and we've heard it from a lot of other people other than just him. But many times that we need infrastructure spending. The Democrats cannot vote against that. Even if it's Trump, they've been talking about infrastructure spending since Clinton first came into office in 92. They're going to have to capitulate.
Not only will they capitulate, I bet they embrace it.
They have to. They have to.
Because they will want to embrace it, because if they don't embrace it, they won't get their share of the spoils.
That's right.
You know, I don't know who it is. I always heard Rick Rule say it, but I'm sure he heard it from somebody else. Or maybe it was Doug Casey, you know, that elections are nothing more than advance auctions on stolen goods, right?
Right.
You know, it's kind of a clever...
I think that was Casey.
But it's true. You know, you don't want it to be true, but it is.
Yeah.
And now that they're back in power, the Democrats are going to want their share of the spoils. And,
yep,
you know, that's the way they get reelected. So, you know, I'm sure we'll have a lot of projects here in California and San Francisco that, you know, have some billboard next to them that has some very fancy sounding altruistic name that came out of Washington, the Rehabilitation of American Act or whatever the heck it is, right?
Yep.
It'll... You know, that will be part of the stimulus, quote unquote, that pushes equities higher. That's where the flow is going to happen.
Yeah, no, I agree with what you say. The perfect dollar storm, and it keeps dropping, and I keep kind of like overlaying that stencil over the top of it, seeing if it still fits, and it just keeps filling in. And on all fronts, you know, if we talk about the kind of stocks that I believe that you and I both think are going to benefit from this milkshake of sorts, they also happen to be the cheapest stocks that nobody's wanted to own for the last 10 years. So,
right.
You know, I think the go-go tech days that we've all enjoyed, well, I haven't enjoyed them as much as others just because we're more fundamental, yeah, analysis guys. But, you know, it seems like that transition's starting to turn the corner. Now, Brent, I got to squeeze one more thing in here.
Sure.
And we got to let you go. I know you're a busy guy. But on the political side of it, when we're looking at this intersection of politics and finance, we look, yep, at all this stuff. Do you, and again, based off what I've seen from you, I mean, and what I've read, you know, of your stuff and seen the videos and things, you and I both share a lot of the big concerns about the overall economy. We've already talked about it a lot. But one of the things that I see is if we have the, like I was saying earlier, you know, you're going to have this renaissance of manufacturing. I'm not saying it's enough where it's going to stimulate all this growth, but you combine that with that infrastructure package. And I look, I don't think it's enough for us to, for the rest of the world to be falling by the wayside and us to be cranking at 3.5 to 4%. But what you could see is you could see, you know, a 0.5% growth rate or a 1% growth rate because of the infrastructure spending, the Chinese tariffs, the rebirth of manufacturing, to where we're basically treading water. And and yet, in, again, that's where the dirty shirt that we're wearing looks even more clean. And you see this propulsion. And I, and the other thing I see when I look at that is it fits right into the Make America Great Again, you know, the Trump aspect of it. And just all these different things driving. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are as this plays out. How far down the road can we get on the rate hike cycle? I know what Powell said. I'm just wondering. I'm still convinced he's got to pull back. I still think that feeds into the milkshake theory. I don't think that does anything to change it. If maybe it accelerates it. When is that point?
So that's a very good question. So I am of the opinion, and I'm going to try to say this in a easy to understand manner, and I apologize ahead of time if it gets convoluted. But because of what I've described as this hydraulic squeeze of liquidity into the United States, I think it is going to end, you know, with the things like the stimulus or the, you know, the infrastructure package that you're talking about. I think that that is going to push the stock market higher. And pushing the stock market higher will have inflationary effects on the overall economy. Whether or not the economy is actually getting stronger or not, I think inflationary signals will be signaled into the economy. I think that will not only allow Powell to continue to raise, I think it will in some senses force him to continue to raise. And I, because we're going to get, if we start to continue to see the inflation effects that have started to show up in the last two or three quarters, and now we're starting to see it show up in wages, and we start to see it show up in consumer prices, you know, we're going to get back into this, you know, inequality debate, you know, this, the rise in inequality as the stock market gets higher, but now all of a sudden goods are getting more expensive and it costs more to do this. You're going to have a battle between Wall Street and Main Street. And if the Fed is seen as continuing to only accommodate Wall Street, you're going to have some political blowback and social unrest blowback between the haves and the have-nots, which, you know, listen, it's going to be a problem here in the United States.
And well, it is already.
I don't think that the Fed is going to be able to stop raising, and I certainly don't think that they're going to go the other way. I think they're going to raise in December. I think that they're going to raise three times next year. And I think they will. I think they will exceed what people think that they will do in 2020. Now, I think this is all going to blow up in a couple of years. So, when you say how long can this go, you know, I think it can go another year or so. I don't think it can go five more years.
If you're just joining us, this is Zach Abraham, and we're talking to Brent Johnson, the Chief Investment Officer of the Santiago Gold Fund. I'm particularly looking at that. One of some research that we did a ways back, and it's not in front of me now. You just brought it to mind, so don't hold me to it. But we looked at the hiking cycles in relation to relationship to the onset of recessions, and we were trying to figure out what is that percentage increase right in rates that starts getting things triggered, and the idea we were working off is it's not so much the nominal rate as it is the rate of change, right? So did the cost of servicing that debt go up 15% or 30% or, you know, what was that increase in debt servicing cost? And I think that common relationship we found was put us somewhere. We were saying that we thought we'd get constrained based on that around a Fed funds rate of 2.5 to 2.75. Do you think it's higher than that, or and that was based
So I think it's higher than that, but I don't think it lasts long at higher than that.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, just because, you know, and I think a lot of the laymen out there don't understand that. And I don't say laymen in a pejorative sense, but, you know, if we increase debt servicing costs and companies inside the S&P are 40% more debt burden than they were in 2007, Bottom line is that's sucking money right out of their bottom line. Not to put bottom line into
sense. Well, and so you know this potentially gets us into the inversion of a yield curve, and I probably don't have to go have enough time to go into complete detail on what the inversion of the yield curve is. But long story short, it means that short rates are higher than long rates.
Right.
And if due to capital flows coming into the U.S. and because of inflationary pressures, if Powell has to keep raising the short end, and for whatever reason, the long end, the market prices the long end, if the market doesn't price the long end higher, we could get into a situation where the yield curve inverts. And everybody and their mother says when a yield curve inverts, it's a sure sign of a recession coming. And that's true. But what they never say after that is it usually doesn't happen for 18 to 24 months. And what they also don't say is during that 18 to 24 months between the time it inverts and the time of the recession is that the stock market goes crazy and it goes up a lot more. And so that's kind of what I think we have the potential to get into. So in any case, I think I'm happy to come back some other time and go into that in more detail if you want. But I think we're just kind of in this crazy time period where the world is searching for the relative place to park capital. And I think the dollar is the mainstay. I think that will find its way into dollar assets as well. I think because of what's going on in all the different asset classes and all the different world, it's going to find its way into the stock market. We're going to have this huge blow off top in the stock market, and then the whole show is going to come to an end. But I think we're going to have a hell of a show before the curtain comes down.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. And my listeners are probably beating their heads going, wait a second, you're the guy on the radio that's always talking about value and the valuations are obscene. And I think you're coming from the same direction. Look, you and I both very much believe in value, and it's the cornerstone of investing. It cannot matter for a long period of time, as we've seen over the last 9 years. And it's you know, like you said, in Step Into Liquidity, that liquidity flow trumps everything. And I'm anxious to see the way it plays out. And you can bet your bottom dollar we're going to have you on again if you'll agree to do it.
Well, you can bet your bottom dollar if I'm wrong, everybody will let me know it.
Hey, I've seen my Twitter feed since I've started talking about this, since our first conversation. My Twitter feed has turned incredibly sour. They loved it when I was talking bearish. The minute we start talking this, it's just everybody went against you, and they're like, "Oh, you've sold out. You've become a permable." And I'm like, "No, that's not it." Anyway, well, hey, pal, I can't thank you enough for coming on. Really appreciate it. Great to get your thoughts and insights, and just looking forward to having on you again. And thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Hope you get to feeling better, and we'll talk again soon.
All right, pal. Best of luck to you. And for those of you that have just joined us halfway through, that was Brent Johnson, CIO of the Santiago Gold Fund. Sorry, a little brain slip there. And you can find him at Brent. What's your ticker? What's your ticker on ticker? What's your handle on Twitter?
Just at Santiago AU Fund. You can also email me at Brent@SantiagoCapital.com.
All right, and I can encourage you guys to read his stuff. Very smart thinking guy, and talking. You're the only one out there really talking about this. You've kind of blazed your own path. So more power to you. We're cheering you on. Thanks for joining us, and we'll have you again soon.
All right, have a great one.
All right, you too, Brent. Take care. All right, well, that's our show for the day. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been great. This is Zach Abraham with Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com. Tune in next week to Know Your Risk Radio with your host, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
Stocks, bonds, and real estate are all at record highs. So why risk it? Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer of Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Call now and get our brand new version of Common Sense Investing. It's our complimentary booklet that shows you how you can protect your retirement portfolio against loss, but still participate in market gains. Safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. Our clients have increased their returns while being insured against loss. And like our client Dory Monson says, go from retirement hoping to retirement planning.
I am indeed a client, Zach, and I got to tell you, you have to read Zach's brand new version of Common Sense Investing. You'll learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call now, get your free copy, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK, or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management's a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.